A weekly pulse on all things green and gold. We call it Weekly Wildy. I'm Alex Stroph alongside the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wildy, who always makes odd faces to start the show. You really do. You're good at throwing me off, though. I'll give you that.
Now, no, it's not hard.
Do you remember Hoodie Mello, Carmelo Anthony, when he wore his hoodie?
No, I remember James Jones and the hoodie.
Hoodie James Jones as well. Yeah, he was an elite receiver. Yeah, that's your look.
You're
today.
You big hoodie guy? You got a hoodie on underneath your vest there, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm a big hoodie guy. I own way too many of them. So we'll make it the hoodie show here on October 24th.
How often do you actually put the hoodie up, though?
Quite often. Yeah, I'll do it during the work day. Yeah, I'll snuggle in, just lock in a little bit. Yeah.
Aww.
So anyway.
That's cute.
All right, that's enough of that. Let's go to the big news of the week, which yesterday in Green Bay was, of course, former Jets head coach and Matt LaFleur's best friend, Robert Saleh, showing up at Green Bay Packers practice. LaFleur says after practice, he'll show up here and there. It's a fluid role, but he's coming in to help the offense, being obviously a defensive head coach and a former defensive coordinator, where he was Jeff Hafley's mentor in San Francisco. So a lot of cool ties to Robert Saleh. And now Saleh, just a few weeks after he was fired as the New York Jets head coach, coming to consult Green Bay. Give me your takeaways, Jason. This is a unique one.
It is. And unique is defined as one of a kind. And this is one of a kind. Because, look, I think there are a lot of circumstances that if it wasn't unique, it wouldn't have happened, right? So we start with the connection with Matt LaFleur, right? These two were roommates as assistant coaches at Central Michigan University in 2004. They become best friends. When Robert Saleh gets married, his best man is Matt LaFleur. He is, you know, I think Sean McVay is kind of on the same spot on the friendship flow chart maybe by now, but Robert Saleh is, if not his best friend, one of his best friends in the world. So that's layer number one. Layer number two is that he gets fired and Matt LaFleur immediately reaches out and says, look, if you want to be doing something, we got a spot for you. But Matt LaFleur said that his advice was, hey, spend time with your family. I didn't realize this till I was doing my research, but Robert Saleh and his wife have 7 kids.
Whoa.
7.
Whoa.
5 sons, 2 daughters. So he spent apparently a couple of weeks with his family, and now he needed to get back to work. The next layer that I don't know the answer to yet is, are the Packers paying him? Because if I got fired by the Jets and the contract language for my contract with the Jets said that any job that I got would then offset money that Woody Johnson owes me, I'm working minimum wage. You pay me as little as you can. Pay me like I'm working in the stock room at the pro shop, because I want to take as much of Woody Johnson's money as possible after he fired me after 5 games. Now, let's talk a little bit about the connectivity of the staff that you mentioned. Jeff Hafley worked with him for 2 years, was mentored by him, runs a style of his defense. And I asked Matt LaFleur flat out, if Jeff Hafley didn't have that relationship with Robert Saleh, would you have done this? And he basically said, no, they wouldn't have. Because you don't want to undercut your defensive coordinator. He also made it very clear, as you pointed out, that he wants Robert Saleh working with the offense, giving the offense the insights of, hey, if I was a defensive coordinator game planning for you, here are the weaknesses and the holes in your offense that I see. Now, do I think, and LaFleur was very clear, he does not want him working with the defense. He said, Jeff and the assistants on that side of the ball have a good thing going on. I don't want to mess it up. Now, do I think that if Robert Saleh walks down the hallway and Jeff Hafley has his husband, he's going to say, hey, Bob, I'm working on this new blitz package. I'd like your opinion. Is Saleh going to say, no, Matt said we can't work together? No, of course not, right? So I think you get all these great benefits. Plus, remember, if he's helping out the offense, well, not only does Matt LaFleur run the offense, but Adam Stenovich. Adam Stedovich worked with him for 2 years in San Francisco. So this feels like a win-win-win-win-win for everybody. It's the perfect fit. Although I would joke that the most important thing is probably that Matt LaFleur told Robert Saleh when he got to Lambeau Field, "Robert, don't worry. Aaron Rodgers isn't here. This is a safe space. He can't hurt you here." Yep. And they can get to work.
Yeah, so several layers I want to get back into there. But the Rodgers part, yeah, I imagine they were chit-chatting a little bit about the quarterback. Did he ever push you on the sideline, Matt? Is probably a question Sal asked. But anyway.
Did you know he picks his nose and eats it?
Yeah. Did you see that? That was an interesting one. So the connectivity is so fascinating to me, right? We know the LaFleur and Saleh angle. You mentioned the Halfley one. I didn't even realize the Stenovich one until you just mentioned it. But obviously that's another connection that's inside this building. Saleh is making $5 million a year from his tenure as the Jets head coach. So I imagine if he can continue to make that and just focus on ball, that would be the ideal situation. We didn't have a large level of commitment from Matt LaFleur when it came to his role. He said he'd be there through today, and then the door's kind of open is what it sounded like to me, Jason. Is that what you took away as well?
Yeah, so I would think that there's, you know, obviously – you and I are doing a digital-only radio, whatever this is, show, and you're in Milwaukee and I'm in my basement. In 2024, there's a hell of a lot you can get done without being in the same place.
Yep.
Now, I think another example would be James Campen, right, who isn't coaching this year after Matt LaFleur didn't rehire him from McCarthy's staff in 19, you know, Campy coached in a bunch of different places, and this year he was out of work, so now he's working as a consultant to the scouting department. He does most of that from home in Florida, where his wife is happy to actually have him home for a year. But he was up here last week. Like, he still comes up to Green Bay, you know, so I would think that might be the blueprint here for Saleh, that maybe every couple of weeks he comes up. But you're right. LaFleur didn't give us any real indication on what the plan is. They did not announce this. Like, there was no press release. So he's, I assume, technically not on staff. He is staying with LaFleur at his house. So, you know, and LaFleur, you guys just want to know everything. Well, yeah, Matt, I like fun details like that. So Uncle Bob is at the breakfast table with the two boys and Brianne this morning, you know, eating Fruit Loops. Like, you know, that's, I like that kind of stuff. So I don't know what the plan would be. But again, there are very few things in the NFL that you can look at and say there is no downside to this. This feels like one where you can say there is no downside to it.
That part I totally agree with. But I'll tell you what this reminds me of. And I don't know if your head went here as well, but you accidentally over the summer, Jason, actually, I think this was back in spring, you accidentally made front page news from your show, Wilde and Tausch, on ESPN.com. Do you know what I'm referring to?
I have no idea.
So Luke Fickell, the head coach at Wisconsin, came on your show, Wilde and Tausch, and he told you guys that Mike Vrabel, the former head coach and obviously a longtime friend, former teammate of his at Ohio State, would be coming to Wisconsin and helping out the team a little bit here and there. It kind of feels like that to me, right? Just like two football guys that have a deep history, just picking each other's brains. I don't know how official this Robert Saleh thing is. I don't know how much he'll be around or how much input he'll have with the Packers. But one thing we do know about him is he is a brilliant defensive mind. So obviously Matt LaFleur and him, given their best friend relationship, can utilize that. And I don't know that he'll officially be a member of the staff come next year, but worst case, that's a phone call or a Zoom session or a film session that Matt LaFleur can easily book. That's where my head went when I heard this.
So now I think Vrabel wound up doing kind of what Saleh is doing with the Cleveland Browns, though, right?
Like, yeah, ended up happening, like, yeah.
He never ended up joining in any real capacity, no, the Badgers.
He just spent some time in Madison for a week or two. But that's where my head went, where it was like, yeah, there's a history there. Of course he'll be there, and he can help out a little bit.
Right, and I don't think this is a too many cooks in the kitchen thing. Mm-hmm. I think know, like the Vrabel thing. I think it makes a lot of sense. Now, I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. One, again, they feel really good about where the defense is.
Right.
So they don't feel like they need him to come in and fix things or improve things there. And they are keeping that, you know, separation there. Whether or not Robert Saleh is here every week, is here every couple of weeks, again, I don't know what that's going to look like. But you'd be foolish, given your friendship with him and given his availability, not to get him involved. So I think there's, again, there's, I think there's a bunch of value in it. Is it going to be the difference between them going to the Super Bowl or not? I don't know about that. But, you know, again, maybe one of the things he can look at is, all right, here's what I'd be doing against Jordan, knowing that he's throwing more interceptions. Here's the way I would, you know, mess with him and try and get him to make more mistakes. So we need to get away from that. I mean, I just think this is terrific. And, you know, Saleh, again, is a guy that, you know, I don't think he probably got a fair shake in New York based on the scenario there. But this is a good thing for the Bears. There's no two-way spot.
No, totally with you on that. All right, let's move on to last week's game. The Packers finally getting that signature win. They were looking for a 24-22 win over the Houston Texans. You mentioned how well the Jeff Hafley defense is playing. How about this stat line from a really good quarterback they were playing in C.J. Stroud? 10 for 21, that's less than 50%. 86 yards passing, no touchdowns, no interceptions. For those of you keeping track at home, that means Romeo Doubs had more receiving yards than C.J. Stroud had passing yards. Only 86 yards for Stroud. He was also sacked four times by that defense, two from Eric Wilson and Rashawn Gary even getting on the board. You know, it was kind of an easy one, but he got there nonetheless as C.J. Stroud is sacked four times. So not only was it the signature win the team overall was looking for, Jason, but the defense slowing down a really good quarterback and having their way with him. So last week, both a note of, hey, we can hang with the best of them, but B, hey, the defense can hang with the best of them offenses. All in all, a really good win for the Packers, but especially Jeff Hafley and his defense.
Yeah, and look, that is a really bad stat line for a really good quarterback, right? Like, it was, we thought maybe it would be a shootout between two good young quarterbacks, and that's not what materialized. Jordan Love threw two picks, also had an exquisite touchdown pass that I still think was one of the best throws I've seen him make. And I had a few different fans who are avid listeners to all of our programming say, isn't it crazy that we once were talking about the lack of wow throws? And it is. But again, this is my number one pet peeve about Jordan Love analysis. These jackwagons who love to talk about how they knew all along that he was going to be good. Like, you should have come to the practices in 2020 and 2021, and you wouldn't have been able to say that because you would have been wondering the same way that Devontae Adams was, right? Like, again, let's forget me. Let's face it. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I don't even know why you're watching this video right now. But take it from Devontae Adams. One of the reasons he didn't stick around, yeah, he was pissed that they lowballed him on the contract offer in 21. But it was also after one game with Jordan Love, where he almost got killed against the Chiefs, he didn't think Jordan Love was going to be any good. And guess what? He was wrong. I had my doubts. I was wrong. But the credit goes to Matt LaFleur. The credit goes to Tom Clements. And most importantly, the credit goes to Jordan Love, who worked his ass off to become the guy that could make the throw to Tucker Kraft that he did. So don't sell short. Like, this guy just had these, he was just oozing so much talent that he was always going to be this good. He worked to get this good, and he worked to be a guy who throws this many wow throws now when he couldn't throw a wow throw for basically 2 years of me watching him practice.
You're totally right. You know, I liked the draft pick. I feel like I was in the minority the night of the draft, right? Obviously, for a team that was looking for the Super Bowl, a quarterback in the first round was a bold choice, but I liked it. I did not think he was the guy at this point last year, Jason, right? This was a 2-5 team a year ago.
Correct.
So to see what he's gone through just in the last year, take away everything before that, to go from a 2-5 team to what he did in the second half, to winning a playoff game, and then to coming in this season, missing two games, knocking off the rust, and what he's been able to accomplish even the last few weeks is so impressive and shows why he got the contract he did this offseason. There has been a tremendous amount of growth from Jordan Love, and maybe we don't do a good enough job highlighting that because he has evolved into a really damn good quarterback.
Right, and now he's going through another growth spurt, right? Like, you know, the girls are both at ages where they're having kind of those last growth spurts, right? And I don't know how tall they're going to end up. They got two short parents. But I know when one or both of them is going through that, you know, their muscles and their bones ache, and, you know, they got growing pains, right? That's why we call it that. Well, Jordan's going through another one of those phases in his maturation as a franchise quarterback in the NFL. And that is, and we've talked about it a bunch on our show, and I had that conversation with him last week that I'm going to use for a Sunday story in the State Journal, where he and I, the two of us, just talked, and talking about the idea of pressing boundaries and trying new things and making plays that he wouldn't have tried before when he was just sort of following the offense. And that's where you see the explosive growth, mm-hmm. where he's going to make more and more plays that only the elite quarterbacks make. And so, you know, do the interceptions cause problems sometimes? Yeah, right? Like, he didn't see the nickel dropping off of Romeo Doubs and getting into the passing lane, deflecting that pass to Wicks. The first interception on the opening drive gets deflected. The linebacker takes it back 45 yards. And then he didn't handle the pressure coming from his right off of Zach Tom's side, and he airmailed the other throw to Watson. Like, those are things that, again, those happen. You would like them to not happen, but it's even better when they happen and you win anyway. And I just think that he is going through another piece of his, you know, we can all say he's a good quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
I think we know that. How good, how very good, how great, how MVP, how Hall of Fame great is he going to be? I don't know. But now he's going through the next step of the process, and there's going to be times where, like, well, what the hell was he doing there? Like, that, it's okay for him to go through that. And you know, I do think we were spoiled by Rodgers. And most of us, you weren't even born yet, but most of us were spoiled by Brett Favre, but we have forgotten the growing pains that Brett Favre had. Like, and some of them were still in the years right before the Super Bowl team. Like 94, 95, he was still, you know, Mike Holmgren on NFL Films mic'd up. No rocket balls, please. Like, that's what he went through. And so, you know, I don't know how many more kind of growing pains there are for the rest of the season, but I don't think Packers fans should be worried about this. I don't get the sense that they're worried about it. I think anybody that's frustrated with him is definitely in a very small minority, but, you know, he can make some magical throws that I never thought he'd be able to make watching him those first 2 years in training camps.
8 interceptions leads the league. He's tied with Patrick Mahomes, not a bad guy to be in company with. Also, Gardner Minshew leads the league with 8
interceptions. Fewer games, though, right?
Fewer he's done games, it in, right.
what, five games?
5 games to 7, right. But he's also second in the league in touchdown passes, only playing 5 games. So he's averaging 3 touchdowns a game at 15. He's tied with Lamar Jackson for second most in the NFL, behind Baker Mayfield with 18. So when you point that out, it's not the greatest of ratios, but let's acknowledge the record once more. This team is 5-2. He's not losing football games due to the interceptions. If that starts happening, maybe the worry meter goes up. But I think you're right. It's growing pains, but he's still finding ways to win games while doing it. So I'm not concerned. It's hard for me to be concerned. He is a pleasure to watch, though, man. He's fun in his own way. He emulates what a Packers quarterback is to me, Jason. I don't know if that's a weird way to look at it, right? He has some tendencies of Favre. He has some tendencies of Rodgers. He has his own things, too. He just feels like such a Green Bay Packers quarterback to me, especially here now in year 2 as a starter.
Yeah, I am curious how he is going through this process, though, because, you know, we talked to him on Wednesday at his locker, and one of the things I like about him, And one of the things that I have criticized his predecessor for is, by the way, I don't know if you saw Rodgers' press conference after they lost to the Steelers on Sunday night, but it was refreshing that he basically, I'd say, took my advice, because it wasn't because I told him by any means, but like, he owned his own poor play. Like, and Jordan Love does a really good job of that. It's another quality that I like about him. Like, I want guys, I don't want him taking the blame for stuff that isn't really their blame. But if you could do it in a way that, you know, takes some of the heat off your guys and puts it on you, that's what I want in my leaders. And I think Jordan Love does a good job. We talked about his picks again yesterday. And look, I just went through the two things he talked about in terms of the things he's got to do better, but he can't, let's all agree here. And he would, if he was, you know, doing weekly love fest, I don't know what we would call the podcast, but, he admitted he can't keep doing this. He can't, because it is going to cost him games if he keeps doing this. So he's also self-aware enough to know that he needs to go through this growing pain period without quite as many interceptions as he's thrown.
Yeah, that's a good point. We will see. Hey, let's.
Well said.
Yeah, well said. Let's focus on this upcoming matchup, because Jacksonville is not very good. They have another $55 million quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, but they've struggled this year. Now, do you view this as a quote unquote trap game? Do you believe in those?
I do. I mean, you know, again, this is not a Jets centric podcast, but you saw Rodgers and Davante Adams, who had just gotten there, talk a lot about how they had bad energy on their sideline for that game. They didn't understand it. Guys weren't congratulating guys on plays. I don't think the Packers have that issue, but I do think your attitude can affect your performance. And if you go into a game thinking you just roll your helmet out there and beat them, these guys are still professionals. They've still won some games. Do I see a path to defeat for the Packers? Yeah, but they got to screw up a lot to get there.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, they're not very good in Florida historically, even when they're playing New Orleans in Florida, or the Bucks or the Jaguars. So I think the last time they played there maybe was the 16 opener, if I remember correctly. So
that would make sense if you're not counting that Saints game, yeah.
Yeah, so last time they played the Jaguars in Jacksonville. So, look, this is a game, you know, we've said it now a couple of weeks before the Texans game didn't qualify for this, but we said it for a couple of other games before that. If you are the team that you think you are, you don't lose a game like this.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great momentum roll you could be on going into a marquee game on your schedule at home late afternoon on a Sunday in early November against the Detroit Lions, to be on a 4-game winning streak for that matchup. Like that, you can't stub your toe now. Now, would it be fatal to their play? No, it's an AFC team and whatever else, but this team's not very good, right? I mean, Trevor Lawrence is going through the growing pains of being a learning to fly franchise quarterback, and he ain't playing very well, and his team's not playing very well. And Doug Peterson, who has won a Super Bowl as a coach and as a player, is going to get fired down there. And it's going to be because the quarterback hasn't grown enough. And do you think it's because Doug Peterson sucks at quarterback coaching?
No,
I don't. So he's going to be out of a job next. And it's because that this team isn't very good. So, no, this is – you can't lose this game. Like, you may have some flat moments in this game, but don't put yourself in a position. So, yeah, I do believe in the trap game concept. I would just say this, though. Young teams probably still – and this team especially – probably not in that place of taking, like, they're just so damn excited to be playing in the NFL. Like, I don't think that they have an energy problem ever. Like, they're still a couple of years away from taking this stuff for granted. So I'm not worried about that at all.
I imagine I can speak for all Packers fans when I just heard you say that. It fires me up right there, man. I mean, this team is so fun to watch, and they better win this game. It better look a lot like the Cardinals game from a few weeks ago, right? Just a complete complimentary game, all 60 minutes, or, and worst case, make it look like the Rams game. Just get a win and maybe have to hold your breath at the end, but lead throughout. Let's get to four downs, four questions I write for Jason Wilde. He has no idea what's coming next. Let's start with first down. You mentioned Doug Peterson, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was Brett Favre's backup quarterback from 1995 to 1998. Obviously, you were covering the teams those years. Any Doug Peterson as a player memories for you, Jason, during your time covering him?
Yeah, I love Doug Peterson. I learned so much football from Doug Peterson. I would, you know, if there was nothing going on in the locker room and there wasn't an interview that I needed, he was one of the guys that I would always talk to. And so he taught me a ton. You know, I remember when he retired and talking to him about going into coaching at a high school. He just wanted to coach. And I don't know if he envisioned going. I think he did not. He never planned. Like, he planned on being a dad and just, you know, kind of living. He got good money to go with Andy Reid in 99. To be the starter. And then I believe he came back
he
as
did.
A backup.
Yeah, from 01 to 04, yeah.
And the story that I remember most was when Favre played after his dad died. They went golfing that day, and Deanna called Doug Peterson. And Doug Peterson was the one who had to tell Brett.
Oh, wow.
And I remember talking to him about that in the locker room after that Monday night game and Doug getting all emotional. And he's just, he's just one of my favorite people. Like, I've, you know, again, when you do this as long as you have, the he's one of my favorite people list is a pretty long list. But he's, you know, I feel bad for him. I think he's, you know, he's with a franchise that feels like it never can get things right. And so, he's a good coach. He's a great dude. But yeah, he taught me a ton of football. I'm a better reporter because I got to cover Doug Peterson.
That's awesome. That's a good story. Let's go to second down. Not so happy, though. What does Rich Bisaccia do exactly, Jason? Obviously, some things on the special team side were good last week, as Daniel Whelan is a weapon, man. He's a great punter. Brandon McManus hits the game-winning field goal in his first week as a Packer. Those were the good. Punt returns, not one, not two, but three of them were disgusting, right? You have the turnover, you have Jaden Reed catching when he shouldn't, you have Keyshawn Nixon opting not to catch when he should. I felt like the punt returns were disastrous against Houston. So I'm just curious, why does it always feel like there is a special teams blunder for this team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been getting a lot in the YouTube comments during our show and tweets and stuff about, you know, we got to hold Rich Bisaccia accountable. There's a lot of Rich Bisaccia hates, you know, and look, that when it gets out there that you're the highest paid special teams coordinator,
that's why I acknowledge it. Yeah.
Goes with the territory. Right. Yeah. It has not been transformative. His hiring has definitely not been transformative. I would say, look, I know they had a kickoff return that got out on Sunday against the Texans. I feel like that was the first return of any sort that has been of a meaningful distance this season on punts or kickoffs.
Sure.
So their coverage units are good, right? Their punter is good. You know, I don't think Rich Bisaccia is to blame for Braden Narveson's consistency. Do I think Rich Bisaccia is to blame for Anders Carlson being drafted? Yeah, in part, for sure. I mean, it wasn't his final decision, but he clearly was a factor in that selection.
Sure.
And when you decide that you spend a draft pick on a guy and then you decide he's not good enough, that's a failure. You know, and I saw that he hit a 55-yarder for the 49ers last week, but he also missed an extra point. It was the quintessential Anders Carlson experience, right? I still think he's going to be a good kicker in the league. I do. I just think that you don't waste draft picks on those guys because it takes them a while to figure it out. So, you know, does he get too much blame? Does he get, like, do we give him credit when things go well? Like, you know, it's not Rich Bisaccia's fault that Keyshawn Nixon lost the ball in the sky not even in the sun, right? Like, he's a professional NFL player. Like, but hey, outfielders lose balls in the outfield, fly balls every once in a while, right? I don't know how he lost track of it, but he did. But the problem is once he did, he didn't do the Peter call. Peter, which I don't understand why it's Peter. Don't understand that at all. But basically, if you're not going to catch it, then you got to make that so people know to get the hell out of the way. And he did neither. So that's how that happens. You know, Jaden Reed retreating into the end zone. I mean, the guy kicked a Wayland ball, a Wheeland ball, and he lost track of where he was because he had to run back so far. Like, catastrophic? No. Huge turnover. That one's you can't do that.
Right.
But the bottom line is that their special teams are better than what they were under some other guys, but not in any way significantly better. It's mildly or slightly better. And when you're brought in as the highest paid guy and a former interim head coach, the expectation is to be better than that. And I think that's reasonable for fans to feel.
The word transformative, I think, is a good one, because I think when that hire was made, me as a fan had really high expectations for what he would do in order to implement change. And yep. I just don't feel confident that we've seen that at all.
Nope. Which I think is reasonable to feel. Like, again, that's the expectation. It's all about expectations, right? When A.J. Hawk is the fifth overall pick and he collects a lot of tackles, he sucks to a lot of fans, right? Yeah, when Blake Martinez is a fourth-round pick, wears the same number and does the exact same thing, oh, he's one of their good players because he was a fourth-round pick and the expectations weren't high. So that to me, that's what this is.
It's a good point by you. Well done. Last thing on the special teams. We've got a punter. That's for sure. Daniel Whelan, he can boot that damn ball. Let's go to third down. Eric Wilson is such a fascinating one to me. Kind of a veteran linebacker. You know, he's been on the field a lot this year, but I don't know that was the ideal situation for this team who drafted two linebackers in the middle rounds. Obviously, Quay Walker goes out last week. He steps in, you know, full-time in his place. Two sacks, plays, leads the team in tackles. I thought he had a great game against the Houston Texans. Uh-huh. Eric Wilson, kind of a cool story. I feel like this is the second time I've asked you about him on this program dating back to the preseason. What do you make of Eric Wilson's efforts?
Yeah, I love Eric Wilson. I love players like Eric Wilson, right? Veteran guys who are consummate pros. And when they get opportunities, not only do they not suck, they play well, right? And for a long time, you know, I love Ted Thompson, RIP, but these are the types of players he wouldn't put on the roster, right? The kind of low price veteran guy who's been around. He wanted young guys that he could then develop into better players and still had their ceilings way ahead of them. Well, you know, there is a place in the NFL for the Eric Wilsons of the world. You need them on your team. And that was very evident. Like, look, I love his story. I've written about him probably three times this season now, right? He starts training camp with the starters, even though they drafted Edgerrin Cooper and Tyron Hopper. At the end of training camp, he's still with the starters. He still is a starter, despite those guys having all summer. Now, have they wanted to get Edgerrin Cooper more snaps, and have they done so? Yes. I don't know if you noticed this, though. That big completion that the Texans had early in the first half, you can see Xavier McKinney in the replay telling Edgerrin Cooper, hey, bro, you were supposed to cover him where he was running wide open. Like, you know, the touchdown Saquon Barkley had in the opener, Edgerrin Cooper was in no man's land. He lined up in the wrong spot, and it leads to a touchdown. Again, what happens with young players? Well, what happened on Sunday? Quay Walker leaves the game. A guy who did not take a single snap at Mike linebacker all week puts on the green dot helmet and just goes out and has two sacks, four tackles for loss, breaks up a pass. Like, dude, that guy is legit. And he costs you next to nothing. And you're, again, the expectation game. Talk about outkicking the expectations. I mean, but he's you know, and I took some grief from Tausch. It's not my nickname. It's Rich Bisaccia's nickname for him. But Bisaccia nicknamed him Body Beautiful. Because the dude is like a Roman sculpture, right? But the reason why, but here's the thing. The reason why it's not just, oh, you know, he's McDreamy. It's the fact, and LaFleur said it perfectly. You don't look like that without being disciplined. I ain't disciplined, right? I mean, I had Lucky Charms before we recorded this, right? So I don't have that kind of discipline. But for a guy to have that kind of discipline in his life and then to have it in his preparation as an NFL player, that's how you end up getting the production you got from him in the game when your former first-round pick leaves with a concussion and this guy hasn't taken a single snap in that position and goes out there and plays that way. So, look, there's value in those types of guys. They're lucky to have Eric Wilson on their football team.
Magically delicious. All right, fourth down, last one for you. We got less than 3 minutes. Brandon McManus walks it off last week. Could that game have ended any other way? It just felt like the perfect way to sum up last week in the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how the guy that pushed Joe Mixon was not the guy that was ejected.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
And then he's there again for the McManus Lambeau.
He had a big Sunday. Good for him.
It's a good story. You know, again, when I went to talk to Brandon on Friday, because I wanted to learn more about how the operation went during the week, you know, the first thing he said was, because I went to him one-on-one at his locker, well, what do you want to talk about? I don't like the fact that that's in the background still, the stuff that happened with Jacksonville. So it makes it a little bit harder of a story to say, oh, this is great, but It was a great finish.
It sure was. And, you know, we'll see if he was the right decision. We'll see if he is a bona fide upgrade over all the other kickers that have been in the building the last few weeks. But I think that is proof why you bring in a veteran, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt. And look, I don't know if Braden Narveson makes that kick or not, but it's a 45-yarder. And he was iffy from that distance.
Sure was.
During his entire Packers tenure.
And ultimately, it got the Packers their signature win. They look to go 6-2 with a win at Jacksonville this weekend before returning home for a big time matchup next week against the Detroit Lions. You can get Jason on Twitter X at Jason J. Wilde. All of his work in the Wisconsin State Journal. You, of course, can listen to him every weekday from 9 to noon on Wilde and Tausch with Mark Tauscher. I'm Alex Strofe. You can find me on Twitter X at Alex_Strofe. Jason, always a pleasure, my friend. I was really looking forward to this one today, and I can safely say you delivered. Your takes were magically delicious, just like your Lucky Charms.
I am the Eric Wilson of ESPN Wisconsin.
Yeah, we call you Body Beautiful behind your back. How'd you know? It's Weekly Wilde. We'll talk to you next Thursday.